Hello everyone and welcome to episode 4 of the Continue Cast. Episode 4, James O'Hurley just came in, he just left. He came in, right? And he goes, I've got you a gift. I was like, really? Gifts? And basically, like, we bonded over non-league football, which to a lot of people you might find boring if you don't like football at all. But, you know, we had the initial conversations. I invited him onto the podcast and he said, yeah, sure. And I said, let's jump on a phone call and I can go through what the crack is. And he's like, sure. And we ended up talking for about 2 hours about, you know, non-league football and stuff like that. And even the other day before he came in, we just had another call. He said, yeah, what time? 2 p.m. 2 p.m. is great because we're going to watch the Fury Usyk undisputed boxing fight. So it was obviously going to be a late night for the Paraverse. So we didn't want an early start. But yeah, like he's a big Cray Wanderers fan, non-league team. And the gift he gave me was a scarf, a Cray Wanderers scarf. And it's so cool. I'm wearing it now. But yeah, I'm definitely going to go with him to see his team with him. But honestly, he's the nicest guy. And in this podcast, we do talk about non-league football. But even if you don't like football, we don't actually talk about, like, you know, proper, like, stuff you understand. We just talk about, you know, the community of it and how we love that about non-league football rather than, like, the Premier League, the big leagues and stuff. So, yeah, like I say, even if you don't like, you know, that sort of thing, you'll still be able to listen to this and enjoy it. And James is, he's like the nicest guy ever. He is the nicest fella ever. And I really, really think you're going to enjoy listening to him. He's just a nice guy. We talk about non-league football, boxing a little bit, because obviously the big fight. And we do talk about his music as well. He's got a great song out called Evil, as I currently am recording this. By the time it is out, he's going to have a new single out called Red and an album out, hopefully. But he did say that might be about December time that's out. But you've got to check him out. He's the nicest guy. He's so nice, honestly. And considering I've never met him in person before up until today, like, that was such an easy podcast. It was like I've known him for years. So this is it. This is episode number 4 of the Continue Cast. It's with James O'Hurley. And let's get into it. The main event. Did you watch the fight last night?
I did watch the fight last night, yeah.
Right, come on. Yeah. What's your opinions on it?
I thought Fury blew it a bit, to be honest with you. Yeah? I don't really think he looked like he was showboating the whole time, when in reality, I think he'd just run out of ideas. I don't think he knew how to fight Usyk. I think Usyk is a really good fighter. I think he's a really professional boxer. And I think Fury, it's a bit like, I often think with Fury, it's a bit like with Man United, with Fergie's United. Mm-hmm. They'd almost have beaten teams before they walked out on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And if he hasn't beaten a fighter before the fight, I think in the ring he sort of runs out of ideas. Mm. And I think to a certain extent that Usyk, he's pretty unwavering when it comes to his attitude. He's so focused and firm. I thought the fight was kind of, if it had been a draw, I think maybe it would have been a fair result as well. Mm. But yeah, I think Usyk did win it.
Yeah,
personally, what do you reckon?
For me, it was the first time ever I'd done my own card.
Yeah,
so I was like writing, and I'd done it on my Instagram story, so I could like flip back and see what I actually did.
Yeah, yeah,
if I'd done anything else, I probably wouldn't have
count it up.
But yeah, but I scored it as a draw.
Okay.
I saw it as a bit of a seesaw. I thought Fury to me had the earlier rounds. So I got Usyk round 1, Fury round 2, Usyk round 3, Fury round 4. But then Fury took the 5 and 6 rounds. So I scored it as 4-2, the 6th.
Yeah.
I thought Fury had the 7th, the 8th, Usyk, and then that 9th round.
Yeah.
Which, because the thing is, in the 6th round, I thought Fury could have knocked him down.
Yeah, definitely. there was a few times where he got some really good shots on him and almost sort of didn't carry on boxing.
Yeah.
He sort of hit him and then backed off.
What you said, run out of ideas.
Hit him, backed off. It was almost like he was sort of thinking to himself, oh, what I'll do is I'll just see this fight out and try and win it on points.
Yeah, because after that sixth round, where Fury looked, Usyk looked a bit wobbly.
Yeah.
I thought this is done. I thought Fury was coasting at that point.
Yeah.
But that ninth round, that was mental. Yeah. And I thought the ref saved him there. Do you?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. 20 more seconds, 10 more seconds.
He would have knocked him out.
Gone.
He would have knocked him out. But yeah. The thing is, because he technically went down on the ropes, the referee done the right thing to do, like the 8-count stoppage, because if the ropes weren't there, he would have went down. But I think if he carried it on a little bit longer, I think the fight's over.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? He's good in that heavyweight category because you've got so many sort of different fighters with technical abilities and stuff. And even with Wilder, at the time, I remember thinking, I don't think Fury's going to beat Wilder. I remember thinking that the first fight, it's not going to happen. I remember thinking, oh, Wilder's too much of a big hitter for him. But obviously stayed in the fight. We had the draw and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But sort of looking at it now, I don't know with Fury. I don't know whether he's sort of just become a bit more comfortable in his life, so he's lost that killer inside him. And it felt to me like he'd run out of ideas. Felt to me like he'd sort of gone in that ring and gone, oh, actually this bloke can really fight, and everything I'm doing, he's not flinching at all, he's just focused and carrying on going and keeps coming at him. I mean, I don't remember a moment in the fight where Fury was sort of in the centre of the ring. He was
sort
of like round the edge of the ring on the ropes the whole time. So whatever Usyk's sort of game plan was, it kind of worked, I think, really.
I just thought, I mean, I scored it as a draw, but I thought Fury was going to win.
Yeah.
I called it ninth, I called it ninth round for Fury by knockout.
Yeah.
But ironically, it was Usyk being knocked out Fury in the ninth.
Yeah.
But like, because I just thought, I always go back to that Wilder fight, where Wilder's done that mad left hook on him and he went down and he got back up. And to me, I just thought this is Fury's destiny.
Yeah.
I just thought it's just meant to happen. So that's why I'm kind of like thinking, I think he's going to do it, man.
Yeah, I think sometimes, obviously, because Fury's a British boxer, we sort of slightly forget as well that it was kind of Usyk's destiny as well.
Yeah, you know? With the whole Ukraine thing.
Undisputed. The war and all that kind of stuff.
Undisputed cruiserweight.
Yeah.
Went and fought in the war.
Yeah.
Undisputed heavyweight. That's mad.
He's a great fighter, Usyk. My favourite boxer of all time is Joe Calzaghe.
Okay.
And I know, obviously, he was sort of a middleweight and things like that, but he sort of reminds me of Joe a little bit. Just hard as nails.
Yeah.
And just goes about it professionally. Just keeps going, stays in fights till the end. And, I did think Usyk won it. I was watching it with my dad and he said the same thing. It was like, Fury's not really... I thought he'd have just... Especially in those later rounds, I thought he might have really gone for it. And gone, do you know what? This is my destiny. I've tired this bloke out. Now I've got all this energy. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He just sort of... I don't know. It just felt like he didn't really... Just sort of sat back and...
Yeah.
Didn't really go for him.
I couldn't make a case for Fury winning that fight. I could make a case for the draw.
I agree with that.
And I could make a case for Fury, Usyk nicking it.
Yeah.
But that referee, he's had an absolute mare. What fight did he see to score it as Fury to win that fight?
Yeah. Is it like 14-13?
Yeah.
Well?
What did you watch?
Yeah.
What did you watch? He's had a shocker there. But like for me, I mean, scoring people at home or scoring in general is subjective anyway. But when after the fight, I was like, it's for me, I felt it was a draw. But then I could see Usyk winning, but no way Fury.
Yeah.
No way.
I completely agree.
Like the rematch, apparently it's meant to happen in October. But I mean, this fight took 2 years to happen. Do you really think that's going to happen in October?
No,
I don't know. I mean, but you know, the rematch is going to happen. Yeah. Have you ever been to a fight before?
I have, yeah. I went, was it last, a couple of years ago now, I went to the Tottenham Stadium and saw Fury, the fight that everybody thought was going to be.
It's going to be his last AJ. One, yeah.
And everyone thought it was going to be AJ, and it was Chisora, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Went to that fight. That was good. One of the best fights I ever went to was a few of us went to Wembley to watch George Groves versus Carl Froch.
You went to...
That was really good.
Crikey.
That was really, really good. I really like Carl Froch as a boxer. Mm. I think he's pretty good as the sort of on the commentary and stuff as well, as sort of a pundit. He's pretty good. And that was really, really good. I used to... my day job is like I'm a sound engineer, so I sort of... I did a lot of stuff with like Team GB Boxing. We used to do a lot of stuff at York Hall in Bethnal Green.
Okay.
A lot of boxing and stuff, and that was really good fun. And my uncle Richard was a boxer. He used to...
Really?
Yeah, my dad's brother Richard, he was a boxer.
You didn't want to get yourself get in the ring there, the ropes?
I'm neither a lover nor a fighter. Many women can...
Did you ever see your uncle box?
No, it's a long time before.
Oh, a long time.
I sort of came along when he sort of in his youth and stuff. He lives over in Ireland, Uncle Richard, but he he was a boxer. My dad said he was very good. He's very, very good.
Talking of Ireland, it's just to put it on my head, so your last name, O'Hurley,
yeah,
is that Irish?
Yeah, my dad's side of my family are Irish. Yeah,
so you're half Irish?
Quarter Irish. My grandparents,
oh, that makes sense,
Irish,
so. O'Hurley, because you said that you was born like kind of round here.
Yeah.
But then you got a last name of O'Hurley, and you mentioned the island thing.
Yeah, I was born in Queen Mary's Hospital in Sidcup, mm-hmm. and sort of grew up in Bexleyheath, and then sort of moved a bit further into sort of Dartford area. Yeah. And, my dad's side of my family. I've got quite a lot of my family still live out in Ireland and stuff, so.
Whereabouts in Ireland?
So my grandparents were from, my grandma was actually from a place called Arklow, which is sort of south of Dublin. In the sort of bottom right-hand corner. Mm. My granddad was from a place called Douglas in Cork, which is sort of mad, really, because it's this sort of tiny little town in sort of Cork City where Cillian Murphy, the actor who's just won all the Oscars, he's from the same town as my granddad. So it's sort of this thing of whenever I've sort of seen him win his Oscar and everything, I thought, oh, I bet my granddad would be made up.
Have they got like strong Irish accents?
My cousins have.
It's funny because I didn't know, but I went to Dublin for like a music thing, and there was the River Liffey in Dublin.
Yeah.
In Dublin, they know, because a taxi driver was talking to me on the way back to the airport, and he was effing and blinding, and he went, have you spoken to anyone from Cork yet? And I went, I don't know. And he went, you'll know because you. I'm not going to do the accent. It's terrible because I can't do it. But he said, you'll know if they're from Cork because they've got this boop accent. Boop, 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 boop. And then he went, because he apparently told me if you're north of the river or south, they can tell what side you're from. Yeah, and the people from Dublin hate the people from Cork, and the people from Cork hate the people from Dublin. It's quiet. People was going, boop, 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 boop. And I was like, whoa.
I get a lot of people send me pictures if they go to Ireland because you, obviously the game hurling. You play the game hurling with the stick is called a hurley. So there's so you can buy a hurley. So
what's hurling?
Hurling is a game a bit like sort of a combination, I suppose, of sort of hockey and lacrosse.
Okay.
And they play it in Ireland, and the stick that they use is called a hurley. So if you go in sports shops, you can buy a hurley.
Buy a hurley.
So it's like a bit of, I think it means in Gaelic, it means like bend. So So yeah, and my uncle lives in Killarney.
Oh.
And a few of my cousins. My cousin Michael was living sort of towards Bray, just sort of south of Dublin. So
that's cool to have.
I'm named after my granddad, so.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm named after an Irishman, so yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And you go out there quite a bit?
Do you know what? I haven't been to Ireland. I've been out to Ireland for work, but I haven't actually been out to Ireland for since the pandemic.
Okay.
And when my nan passed away, I sort of didn't go over as much as we used to, kind of thing. And I've got like a lot of friends who live out there and stuff. And I know a girl who lives out in sort of Roscommon sort of way. And it's just, I think that's one of the things, isn't it? You kind of grow up where we grow up. There's people from every walk, race, religion, creed, culture, from everywhere, really. So.
So if you represent it, if you went to the Olympics,
yeah,
or you was a footballer,
yeah,
would you
Ireland?
You'd be Ireland,
100%.
You would be Ireland. Why's that?
Me and my dad have always watched the Ireland games together.
Hmm.
I don't really feel a great connection with England.
Oh, okay.
In a way. I've never really sort of flown the flag particularly or sung the anthem all that much. It's just, I don't know, it's just not really... I suppose I've always sort of seen myself as English, I suppose, but the weirdest thing is that if I'd have played for Ireland and I'd become captain, I wouldn't have been the first Irish captain born in Bexley Heath, because Andy Townsend would have been.
Of course.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that much of a a big thing. It's like, oh, Andy's already done it. Oh, yeah.
That is crazy. It's funny, yeah. we talk about football, but I've never met you. It's the first time I've met you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to actually finally meet you. Yeah, but likewise, we spoke on the phone twice, and both of our phone calls have nearly hit 2 hours because of our passion for football, and more in particular, non-league football. You've come in today and you've given me this gift, and I'm still wearing it. You are a massive Cray Wanderers fan. I'm wearing a scarf right now.
I am.
But we've just connected on this passion for non-league football.
Yeah.
But like, where did like the whole love of, I mean, you've told me, but let's talk your love of, because the thing is like you support and love a non-league team. And then for me, and like, because of a lot of the people that I know, they don't, they will support a Man United, a Chelsea, a Liverpool, whatever. And then when I said to you, what team do you support? And you say, I'm a season ticket, or there's your season ticket on the table, Cray Wanderers, you know, the oldest football club in London. I'm sitting there thinking, partly that is awesome, partly like, what? Because where does it come from?
So my dad is a Chelsea supporter. My dad was born in Brixton and my uncle was born in Wandsworth, and all of my family are from that area.
You've got family all over the place, haven't you?
Yeah, when my grandparents moved over,
right,
they ended up in London for a while.
Okay.
And so Chelsea, and at that time in sort of the 60s and 70s, bearing in mind that football wasn't on TV and stuff, really, so you had to go.
Mm.
And at the time, in sort of the 60s and 70s, with Peter Osgood and Alan Hudson and Charlie Cook, like Chelsea had this really cool team. They were like this really brilliant team.
Mm.
And so my dad, who is about 10 years younger than my Uncle Tony, my granddad passed away, and he started going to football with my auntie's boyfriend. Then became my husband.
Yeah.
So when I was younger, me and my older brother Charlie, my dad just took us to Chelsea because that was sort of what we did. And me and my brother used to sort of run around and eat crisps and not really pay attention to And then, France 98 was sort of like a big bang moment for me.
Mm.
France 98, Brazilian Ronaldo, Zidane, bang. You know, getting towards starting at like big school and stuff. And then everyone, when you're at secondary school, everyone loves football.
Yeah.
Supporting... And don't get me wrong, I loved Chelsea when it was like Zola and Vialli, and it was great. And I've never actually said this before because I don't want to bring the mood down or anything. But when my parents sort of separated, kind of stopped going for a long time.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to support another English team. Or like another Premier League team, sorry.
Mm.
And the nearest team I've always known about, Cray Wanderers. I've always known from sort of Sid Cup, Bromley area. I always knew that Cray were this team that were like the oldest team in London, one of the oldest teams in the world. And I thought, I'm going to go and watch them.
Mm.
That's going to be my team. And in a weird sort of way, Cray Wanderers saved my life. Because I think without them, I think I might have ended up getting into trouble with people where you grow up or people at school. And Cray really sort of, going there, I just totally fell in love with it. And one of my best friends, my friend Sam, he's a big Arsenal fan.
Mm.
We sort of were both born in Queen Mary's in Sid Cup. And it was kind of like, oh, should we support the same team as a bit of a kind of, that's a thing we can do together.
Mm.
So, I just sort of fell in love with it. I liked how you could just go there and just be part of it and kind of almost know a lot of the people who were already there.
Mm.
And in about 2017, when Chelsea started, when Conte was in charge, I sort of went back a bit more and started going with my dad again, and it was so lovely. And even now, I like going because I like spending time with him.
Mm.
But if you're actually asking me deep down inside of me what the truth, that like my great love is, Cray Wanderers are sort of my my great love, really. I often find with Premier League football, it just doesn't really rock my world, Premier League. I enjoy it for entertainment, mm-hmm. great players, but I don't know, I'm not, it's not the same, it's all about the matchday experience, and as me and you have always said, I've never ever understood why people support football clubs hundreds of miles away that they don't go and watch, because
mm-hmm.
you're just missing out so much. Mm-hmm. Like the matchday experience, win, lose or draw, is the single most important thing.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
if you're not into that, I don't. You're not. Why would you even bother liking football?
Yeah,
like be invested in something and you know get into it and be part of your team.
Yeah,
and I without Cray, I'd be lost.
I completely agree with the whole armchair fan thing. I don't get it. And like we spoke about it the other day, but Manchester United, for example.
Yeah,
there is a lot of people in Kent that support Manchester United. Now, to an extent, I get it because Manchester United are probably the famous club in football.
Yeah,
the story of the Busby Babes. Ferguson, when we grew up, they were taking over. It was Ferguson, wasn't it? Manchester United, they were winning everything. Like, what class of 98? Like, so I get why people would be inspired by that story and follow them.
Yeah.
Get it. But then, when you don't go, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. If obviously, Manchester, I could get why you do because of the story, the history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
If you went a couple of times a year, I would respect it in a way, but you're sitting at home and you say you support Manchester United. It's not even Manchester United, it's Liverpool as well. It's another one or any of these big clubs and you don't go.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for them in a way because like, look, I'm a West Ham fan, yeah? And we've won nothing. Nothing since I've been alive. Nothing. We got to a cup final in 2005 or 2006.
Yeah.
Where we should have won. And then that Gerrard goal breaks my heart to this day. Runner up. We won a playoffs.
Yeah.
The year before that, we beat Preston in the playoff final. It was a playoff final. I saw us beat Blackpool in a playoff final. It's a playoff final. But like last season, to see us win that, you know, people say a third rate trophy. We lived in my old apartment when that happened. I sat when Bowen scored that goal. First of all, I screamed, but then there's that momentary panic: was he onside because of the whole VAR thing? So you stand there and you're like, nah, because we've had the worst season in the Premier League. Something's going to go wrong. And then the goal gets given and the final whistle goes and everyone celebrates. I just sat there and I cried on the carpet. I cried. Yeah. And I sat and I was like, that feeling I got then of sitting there on the carpet crying and my other half going, what the?
I mean,
these Man United fans who you win the FA Cup, whatever, back in the day, they would never have that feeling.
No.
Never have that feeling.
No, I agree.
It's a completely different. It's like, oh, yeah, won the league, sweet. Yeah, Ferg, yeah, we're the best team, but you'll never get that.
No. No, you can only get that from, participating. Yeah.
I've suffered through relegations, man. Yeah. Like that's the worst. Like knowing that the team you had in the Premier League is going to get completely flipped over, and you're going to have to rebuild. Like relegations, I think two are horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
Yeah,
but like I just don't get it. And what upsets me, and I'm so glad I found someone that agrees with me. Like around us, especially here where we live in Kent, there is so many great football clubs. Yeah. I'm talking with the Cray Wanderers. Bromley have just got promoted to League 2.
Yeah.
We have got Gillingham here. We have got Chatham Town. We've got Sittingbourne here. We've got Corinthian up in Longford. Nice little club there. Welling's near here.
Yeah.
I don't know if I said Ebbsfleet and Dartford and things like that. There's loads of clubs around here. And like, what's it, £12 to get in? You know, £12 to get in. And people don't go. Like you say you're a football man and you love football.
Yeah.
And maybe when you was younger, your nan probably bought you a football crazy card for your birthday.
Yeah.
You don't go to any games and you don't support your local clubs. And to me, that's like, could be controversial what I'm saying, but that's how I feel. Like, these local clubs need your money.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and then a team like Dartford as well. Like Dartford are a real like sort of trailblazing football club.
Yeah.
You just think, why would you not want to get involved in
just
that?
Just go. Like just, buy a hot chocolate and like it's a community there.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a community there. Yeah, and like definitely. I'm a massive West Ham fan, but you know, I couldn't make a game because one day it was Sheffield United this year. Couldn't make it because they closed Ebbsfleet International Station. Closed. It was. I went there and it was shut. There was no warning. It was shut. We're doing track works on it. I was like, crud, right? Blackpool Tunnel.
Yeah.
Rammed because it was rammed. I couldn't get there. Could not get there.
Yeah.
So I said, I can't get to the game. I said, you can call up whatever and then you can get it back as club cash.
Okay.
Because that's what it is with those sort of level. You don't get a refund. It goes as club cash. You can buy something from the shop or that money can go to a different
sure,
ticket.
Yeah.
But they just wouldn't give me the money back. They would not give me the money back. I had to go through so long. And the ticket, actually, because it was up in the gods, it was about 30 quid.
Yeah.
Like, 30 quid's nothing to you lot.
No, I know.
And you won't give me the money. And it was just, that kind of frustrated me.
I completely agree with you. My dad's side of my family, I've sort of got that connection to like Celtic Football Club. So they're sort of like a big part of, they're like my big team, I support.
Mm.
And I know it's a bit contradicting what we've just said, but as a sort of my other sort of team, every season I try my very best to get to Celtic.
Yeah.
I'm going next weekend because I don't think that you have experienced football until you've stood in Celtic Park and listened to that fan base do what they do. And if you support another team, a Newcastle, Man United, Liverpool, especially Liverpool, I suppose, with their atmosphere at Anfield. Mm. If you say you're a Liverpool fan and you've never, ever done whatever it takes to sort of get to Anfield, you must be like half a person. Because it's just, why would you... I'm not a Liverpool fan, but why would you not want to stand there at Anfield whenever you get the opportunity and go this... Like, I've stood in Celtic Park and like cried my eyes out.
Yeah.
Because it's so emotional. It's such a moment of kind of, and again, like my granddad, like I just think he'd have loved this.
Hmm.
He'd have loved just, because he loved Celtic Football Club. And I like to sort of keep that alive because that's the thing, and especially with all the music recently, a lot of it is just discovering this man that I never met, was from another country, who essentially spoke a different language, who, you know, I'm named after. I've only ever seen a couple of photos of him. And it's just this sort of reconnecting with that ghost that I never met.
Mm.
And the more I discover, the more I realise what an amazing person he was, especially sort of giving up everything to come over here and start a different life and stuff. And I just think for everything that he did, I get to sit and talk to lovely people like you.
Yeah, because I can't wait to go to Cray next year because Cray Wanderers are getting their new ground, and you've got me this scarf. I'm ready. I want to go.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, I'm more local to the club than you are, so there's no excuse for me.
Yeah,
but like I just because last season I had a West Ham season ticket on the year we won that trophy, and last season I rescinded that ticket because I used to have a season ticket at Upton Park.
Yeah,
and it was just that the West Ham I fell in love with, and I had a season ticket at Upton Park and watched that train wreck happen of all the relegation battles and stuff, but it sounds weird, but I'd take a relegation dogfight Upton Park than the West Ham at the London Stadium with a running track and
100%
scaffolding seats. It's not the West Ham I fell in love with.
No,
when I used to get off that train at Upton Park and I'd walk down Green Street, all I could smell, the first thing you'd see, do you ever go to Upton Park?
I've been to Upton Park.
Yeah, so when you came out of Upton Park, you get the people eating the pie and mash on the right, and you go up and you just smell the smell of Upton. I can smell it now. It's grease. It's
the statue.
Burgers.
The statue.
Statue. Right. It's just, I loved it.
Yeah.
It's Upton Park. I loved it so much. And it's just not the West Ham. I'm still a West Ham fan.
Right.
I'm still a West Ham fan.
Yeah.
Love the club, but it's not. When you change your badge and you put the word London in it, it's for tourists. So it's like, it's just not the West Ham I love it, but it's still West Ham. But last season, I went ground hopping at some non-league clubs, and it sounds crazy to say, but and bearing in mind, West Ham won a trophy last year, and I went to all those conference league games.
Yeah.
I had so much more fun going to the non-league games.
Yeah.
That is mad.
I always think with West Ham are like the London team. I always think that Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham are a bit more of a kind of almost, I don't know, they're kind of like cosmopolitan type teams. Mm. I often think with West Ham, they are like the proper club with the proper fan base, with the proper people. You know, obviously moving out in towards like Essex and Kent and stuff as well.
Mm.
They've got a massive fan base. So I totally understand why people would support West Ham, because they're sort of, they are like the London team. They are like London FC. But moving to that new stadium, I've been to that new stadium when West Ham have played. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's never going to be Upton Park. And I think half of the strength of West Ham was sort of going into that really
hostile... We could
hostile,
beat anyone.
Yeah, definitely. Upton Park,
on our day, definitely. We could turn anybody
so
over.
So close to the corner and stuff.
I remember us giving Frank Lampard some stick. Chelsea come to our place and they beat us 4-0.
Yeah.
But it was around the time John Terry's mum got caught stealing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? We were seeing like, John Terry, your mum's a thief, all throughout the game. And then
allegedly.
And then there's the same thing with Lampard, about like his weight and stuff, and we'll give him some stick. And he had a penalty. So we're giving them both stick, and I had a penalty, and Lampard, Bobby Moran scored it. And he didn't really celebrate, he just went back to the centre bit. But all of us, but John Terry, and it came out of the huddle, and went into the corner of the West Ham fans and gave a fist at the West Ham fans.
Right.
And this West Ham fan stood up and he launched a burger at his back and the sauce went down and he went running to the ref. Look what he's done on my back. But you couldn't lob a burger. I don't condone that behaviour, but you couldn't lob a burger at someone's back at London Stadium.
The good old
it wouldn't
days.
Get there. It wouldn't get it. But like, I used to love the atmosphere at Upton Park. I used to love it so much.
I remember I went with a mate of mine and his mum. And they bought me I love Joe Cole, and they bought me a Joe Cole West Ham mug. And it was Joe Cole, number 26, I think he was.
Yeah.
West Ham mug, and I remember taking it home, and my dad went, "What is that?" I was like, "Oh, I just think he's great." And then the next season, he signed for Chelsea.
So
I remember my mate and his mum going, "You did that. That's your fault. You shouldn't have said it."
He then came back to us as well. Back to us for a stint. But yeah, like the non-league stuff. Like even here, like... Just over the way there, you've got Avery and Hornchurch just over there.
Yeah.
Braintree's just there.
Hornchurch are a good team as well.
They've just gone up.
Really good side.
They've just gone up.
Good team.
But I just love it.
Yeah, it's great. There's nothing like non-league football in terms of the sort of experience of going along, knowing that there's only going to be maybe a few hundred people.
Yeah.
But being able to move from one end of the ground to the other, no fixed sort of seat or anything. One of my favourite sort of non-league stories is I used to live in North London. I lived in Archway for a bit and then I moved to sort of Enfield.
Hmm.
And I used to get on the train near me, and sometimes I'd get on the train, the overground that go through like Bruce Grove and Silvertown, and that's the line that goes into Tottenham, into Seven Sisters. And I remember getting on the train and there was loads of noise, like chanting. I thought, oh no, Spurs fans. I didn't realise they were playing at home, and I thought, oh no. And anyway... It was these group of lads who were singing, "We're just a bus stop in Tottenham, bus stop in Tottenham." And I looked, I sort of was like, who do you support, lads? And they were like, "Oh, we all support Haringey Borough." I was like, oh, fantastic. And just started talking. I said about Cray, because we were in the same league and stuff. And a lot of them had sort of moved to London from different parts of the UK. So they sort of decided to all support the same team.
Yeah.
As a way of like hanging out together and making new friends.
Haringey is in North London.
Haringey Borough.
Haringey.
Yeah, yeah.
Is in
the borough of Haringey.
I saw them
Tottenham
in Hornchurch, and they brought so many fans down.
Oh right, okay, yeah.
They brought so many fans down.
They're a bit of a hipster club, but I love it.
It was mental. They were singing the entire. I mean, they just got relegated, I think.
Yeah, right.
And Hornchurch were top of the league. Hornchurch, absolutely. I think they beat them 3-0.
Yeah,
I sung the whole time.
Yeah,
and
great.
In that catchment area, when you've got a Barnet up there, you've got obviously Enfield are up. Enfield Town have just got up, and then you've got your Arsenals and your Tottenhams.
Yeah,
but for a club like that to have the support like that.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Well, the funniest thing was I was coming back home from where I lived with my girlfriend at the time, and I was coming back and I got on the train from St Pancras to come back to Kent to see my mum. Mm. And there was a group of lads from Haringey Borough on the train that going to, and I was like, oh, what? Oh, I've met some of you guys on the on like the overground yeah. train. And they said to me, oh no, we've got Margate. So they were all going down to watch Haringey play against Margate.
Oh.
And they were all sort of, yeah, just like a group of lads who sort of...
Was that last season?
No, it was a couple of seasons ago now.
Yeah, because it was one. I think it was 1-1 because I follow a YouTuber called Smith. Have you seen him? Where he goes around the grounds and stuff. He's a Tottenham fan, but
okay.
He goes around the ground. He just goes around all these non-league grounds. He loves it, and he just reviews them and stuff. And
I got in an. There was some. We had some really bad high winds at the start of the year, or last year, and there was really bad. And I finished work, got back to St Pancras, and all the trains had been cancelled.
Oh.
So it was just a sea of people, and I was like, I've got a suitcase, I'm exhausted here, I need to get home. Got in an Uber, other cabs are available, and got in, and this lad picked me up, and he was taking me back to Ebbsfleet, and we were talking about football. He said, I'm a Fulham season ticket holder. I was like, oh, right. He said, I also am a season ticket holder for another team, like my local team. I went, who's that? He said, Enfield Town. I said, oh, that's amazing. And started talking. I was in the cab for about 2 hours and got back to Ebbsfleet and everything. Anyway, at the start of the year, we played Enfield Town. Came in, saw him.
No way.
The lad who was the Uber driver. I was like, do you remember me? He was like, yeah, of course I do. Started talking to each other. Had a little chat. And he was there because he goes to Enfield games. And I thought, I don't know if you'd get that.
No,
at a Premier League game.
No,
and one of the, when I went sort of started going back to Chelsea a bit, I remember there was a game where Chelsea beat Man City 2-1, and N'Golo Kanté scored of all people, very rare collector's item. And I remember just sort of going there with my dad, and you know my dad loves it and stuff, but I remember just sort of looking around and thinking it's just all people with popcorn and pizzas, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
but I do think that. If that's what you're doing as a football club, charging people 200 quid or whatever it is now, and you're selling them through sort of like tourist agencies, the real fan group of people who've been going all their lives, kind of turning your back on them, I just think it's a disgrace.
Yeah, it's the thing with London Stadium. Like they sell popcorn and pick and mix and stuff now, and you get like pizzas in a box and stuff. And it's just like you're right. There's nothing wrong with that, but like it's just two different football clubs to me.
Yeah,
the West Ham of old and the West Ham of now.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like I still love West Ham. It's still West Ham. It's still West Ham.
Yeah,
but it's just a different West Ham. It's like
yeah,
I don't know. I can't explain it. It just feels. Weird. We were sold a dream. They said that this stadium's going to be amazing, high tech. And at the time, you know, you have to move on to try and progress.
That's right.
And we probably would have won this trophy if we didn't go there.
It was too good an opportunity not to, wasn't it?
I mean, Leighton Orient wanted it, but they were never going to get it. And then obviously we get it and you go there. And I remember the first season we went there was so many fights because they couldn't work out the segregation. There were so many fights there. Oh, right. There was a massive fight. One, the league game I went to. I went to a League Cup game against Chelsea.
Oh, right, yeah.
It was when Diego Carlos was playing.
Right.
And I think we won 2-1. But there was a massive fight between the Chelsea and the West Ham fans at the end of that game. It was horrendous because we couldn't. But yeah, it's just not... It's still West Ham. I'm still a West Ham fan. But
yeah,
I've now gravitated to non-league because of that kind of disconnect there.
Yeah, I get it. I completely understand it. And to be honest with you, maybe it's biased on my part. I think everybody should do it. I think everybody should go and experience how brilliant non-league football actually is.
Because they need your money.
And it really means something.
Yeah, they need your money. Go there. Do the 50-50 raffle where 50% goes to the club and 50% you can win. Buy a program, buy a hot chocolate.
At Cray, we do the goal thing where you get like a raffle.
Oh, what, you do the guess the minute of the goal, the first goal. Yeah.
When you see the person who does it, the victory they feel when they've done it, I've not won it, unfortunately, yet.
No, but... I've never won a 50-50 either. No. One day I'm going to. But I just love it. I also love the fact you can walk anywhere you want.
Walk anywhere you want, stand around. You can have a chat.
Yeah.
In this weird sort of way, I often think with Premier League football and when I have been to Chelsea with my dad, you pay such an amount to go, you feel like you should be watching it the whole time, because you shouldn't be sort of wasting the money. Whereas what I like about Cray is, because it's a, you know, my season ticket and stuff, you can go there and have like a chat with someone all the way through the game about work and life or what's going on and still love what you're doing. And the number one thing at Cray is they do sell Bovril.
I've never had Bovril. I've only ever heard bad things about Bovril.
No, there's no bad things
about Bovril. I need to have a Bovril.
If they want to sponsor me, Bovril. If you want to sponsor me.
Because Cray haven't got a stadium yet, but you're going to get one next season, that we said. But you was at, what you just spoke about, you was at Hayes Lane, Grand Central M. And I know someone from Biggin Hill, because I used to do my route out there, and they were selling season tickets a couple of years ago for £90. Brilliant. For an adult.
Super.
So when he heard about it, because he's a Palace fan, it's the same kind of area, he's a big Palace fan.
Yeah.
But he was like, do you know what?
A Palace fan.
And I think the kids' season ticket was quite cheap. If not, it might have been free, but they were just knocking out. It was just for a period of time. He was like, I'm going to go have a season ticket there for £90.
Yeah.
And he says a lot of the time, I find myself in the bar area because you can watch the game at the bar.
Yeah.
And sometimes when there's a penalty, they go outside and watch it and then they go back in.
Yeah, yeah.
But like what you just said is true. Like because you're not spending as much, like you feel like you can just...
Well, one of my favourite stories is at Bromley. I remember a mate of mine going... He went, yeah, I went and saw, went to Bromley. He goes, it was the weirdest thing. He goes, you know, it's like absolutely bucketing it down with rain. It was, you know, a limited crowd. And he goes, and there's just Dennis Bergkamp sitting on his own. Just Dennis Bergkamp sitting
there.
His son plays for Bromley. Dennis Bergkamp.
Of course, you're right.
His son.
No,
Dennis,
you are right.
it's like almost like looking at one of the greatest, if not the greatest footballer to ever play in his country. And it's like... What's Dennis Bergkamp?
I found that out of the funniest way. I was playing Football Manager and I was trying to look for some like cheap talent on the sort of free contracts, and I saw Bergkamp and I was like, where do you just pay for it? It was Bromley. And then the next thing I'm like, you ain't related to Dennis, and I googled his name.
Yeah.
And it's Dennis Bergkamp's son.
That's it, yeah.
It's absolutely bonkers.
It's a great ground, Hayes Lane, though. Like, it's such a lovely football stadium.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that we're getting Flamingo Park. Can't wait. Really excited about it. But, you know, it's also a little bit sad in a way, because Hayes Lane is it's a great, great stadium.
Yeah.
Really nice facilities. The Broomfields Club on the side is really lovely. To be honest with you, I've been there before on some Cray games, and it's got screens everywhere, nice food, and you just sit there and have a beer and everything. You just think, oh yeah, I'll go and watch the game in a minute.
Do you do a lot of away days?
I've done a few away days. Sometimes it can be quite difficult. Mm. But I think going to away games is really fun. And when I used to live right by Enfield Town, like near Enfield Lock.
Yeah.
And I have been to a few like away games. I want to do more away games. It's just not always the easiest thing. We sort of work and stuff.
Oh, so. Of course. Yeah.
But I'm so excited about next season. So excited about Flamingo Park. And I can't wait for... It's great because we've got the Euros, and then really excited for the season.
Yeah,
to,
and I'm all kicked off. I'm still wearing this scarf. I can't wait to go.
Yeah,
did you say that your song got played on the Cray on the was it the Hayes Lane?
I believe.
Speaker.
Yeah.
How did you get that?
My manager Mike spoke to the club, and they played the song over the tannoy. Yeah.
That where what part of the like half time before the game?
I think it was before the game. Stupidly, I didn't turn up in time. And he didn't tell me, he was doing it as a surprise, that I'd sort of choke on my cup of Bovril. And it was a really, really rainy night. And I was like, oh, and I had loads of stuff going on. Got there late. And he sort of said to me, oh, did anything happen at the game? And it transpired that he got the song played. I was like, oh, mate, I wish you'd have told me. I'd have not missed that for the... Like,
no.
I couldn't believe it. So, fingers crossed next season.
Yeah, at the new place.
Maybe,
That'd
yeah.
That'd be cool. Was that new song Evil?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Because briefly, like, because your music, like, how did you get into that? How did you find time for music when you've got such an infectious passion for football? Is it just is music like just like something you just enjoy doing, like an escape sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I
where did it come from?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, it's funny really, because none of my family are musicians, really.
No,
a couple of my cousins, a couple of my cousins who live over in Ireland are, but my mum and dad aren't particularly musical or anything like that, so I don't really know where it comes from. But I've always loved doing it. was in bands when I was sort of younger and stuff.
What
and,
sort of bands? Genre?
We were kind of like indie rock sort of bands, I suppose, and a bit more along the lines of, I don't know, a bit more kind of like punk type stuff. I was in a bit of a kind of garage rock type band, and that was great. It was really good fun.
Was she the vocalist, lead vocalist?
I was the guitarist in one of the bands, and then I was the singer and the guitarist in the other one.
How did you transition to just guitarist and singer? Did someone just hear you sing and go, damn?
I've always been sort of very self-conscious that the fact that I don't think my voice is a very sort of rock lead singer voice.
See, I disagree. I think you've got...
Do you?
Yeah, because listen to your voice, genuinely, and not just saying this to just gash you up, but listen to, like, especially on new single Evil, when you say I was in bands, I'm like, makes sense now. You've got that. You have got that frontman voice.
Oh, thank you.
I believe you have, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I've always loved doing it. I've always really enjoyed doing it, and I gave up for a long, long time and just sort of said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And, you know, when you go through breakups or whatever else, or sort of lose people in your life, you just sort of give up a lot of hope and you give up on a lot of things that you love doing.
Mm.
And you know what? As much as the pandemic was a terrible time for all of us, what it did do, I think, is gave you the sort of energy and the impetus to sort of think, I'm going to do the things I love. Because there's so many people who have lost so many things. What is it I love? I love non-league football, I love football, and I love music. So I just started writing some songs, and I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And then I went to your friend of mine, Mr. Graham Waller.
Oh, you met him?
And I recorded a couple of songs with him. And he said, you need to have a word with my friend Pete. Pete lives down in Dorset. He's from Maidstone originally. Hmm. He lives down in Dorset. And I went down to Pete's in Dorset, and I said, I've got these couple of songs. Me and Pete are sort of, we love the same sort of music. We love like folk music, blues music, country music. He plays the mandolin, pedal steel, lap steel, that's banjo. Awesome. He plays all. He's amazing, Pete. Far too good to be working with me, but there you go. I've somehow managed to do it. Esports Arsenal, he's got to have some hope, hasn't he?
Oh, okay.
And it was and he was just like, this is great. This is really good. And unbeknownst to me, he sent it to his manager, who's Mike.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, really lovely of him. He's like, this guy's great. And he's a really nice guy, which is lovely. And it all kind of went from there, really. And I feel like for the first time ever in my entire life, I'm kind of doing the music that I love.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're younger or whatever, you're always in sort of rock bands.
Mm.
But my love has always really been sort of folk and blues music, I suppose. So, and I love sort of country music and... Yeah, and to me, and it was like, well, do you know what? I'm just going to do the things I love, and I won't swear, but to hell with everybody else.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do the things I love because life's too short, and there's no point spending your life not doing the things, completely submerse yourself in the things that you love doing.
Mm.
Music, football, whatever it is, pottery, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just, this life is too short to care about what other people think. And not do what you want to do with your life.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing has just been a really incredible experience. I just feel so lucky and so honoured. And even like speaking to yourself, mate, it's just, it's not just words. I feel genuinely really, really honoured. So
that's really cool. That's really cool if you think that way.
I appreciate you.
Because I just came across like your, I think actually what I found you working with Graham. Yeah. And now and then I do that thing where Graham's working with someone and I'm like, let me just check them out. And I heard your song Evil and I just found it really, really good. And I thought you had such a strong vocal on you and I love the percussion. What's the percussion on that?
Yeah, well,
what is that?
That is a combination of me and Graham doing different... In that studio, he works in Squarehead Studios down in Sittingbourne. Yeah, we just sort of played loads of percussion and bits and pieces and... We put it all together and he did an amazing job mixing and mastering it.
It just sounds different. I can't work out what it was.
It's sort of, I don't know, it's kind of got a bit of a Latin sort of feel to it in a weird sort of, a lot of people have sort of said that. It doesn't really sound like a lot of the other songs that are on the album in a weird sort of way, but I liked the groove of it.
Mm.
I liked the words of it. And it just seemed to work really. And it was, as you know, with like your brilliant music, it's sort of sometimes the best songs, they just happen and you don't know where they come. That's the best, one of the best things I've ever heard Noel Gallagher say, when he said, you know, it's like catching rain in a bucket.
Mm.
You sort of go out and you just sort of, these songs turn up out of nowhere and you're like, all right, I'll have that one. And that was one of those ones, really.
I think it's a great song. I think it's a great song.
I really appreciate
you
that.
You could easily hear that on the radio and stuff. And I'm not going to lie, like, because I get a lot of this thing where people will send me like their song that they've, you know, and I don't like it when they're like, they do it in front of you. And they're like, hey, look, can you hear my song? And they sit in front of you because you can't say anything else but love it. But like, a lot of people do send me some tunes and I'm kind of like, I can be quite critical. Like Lauren came in for episode 3 last week and she said, I sent you a song and you said it was this. And I was like, no, it ain't. And then I sat and I was like, actually, no, I realised, so I changed it. But like, I'm so passionate about songwriting.
Yeah.
Like I love it. But sometimes I feel like I've heard the same lyric a lot of the time.
Yeah,
like with songwriting, like I love you, there's nothing I won't do. Oh, it would be so true if we do stuff. Do you know what I mean? That sort of lyric. But like when I hear,
I'm writing that down.
But when I hear your lyric, I've seen evil, and it's like, and the way you sing it, it's like it sounds like you're vexed when you're delivering that song. And like, I just love the lyric. I love that percussion. I love the melody. I was doing my deliveries at work. I had that on repeat about 11 times because I was trying to figure out what the hell was that percussion.
Yeah.
And like the chorus was so catchy. I looped it, genuinely looped it.
Thanks,
but it's a great song.
No, how do you sort of find writing your songs? Like something like Formula or something? Do they sort of appear or do you just sort of work on them? Or
for me, I've changed, I think like, I've changed my songwriting methods over the years, but nowadays, like, I want to try and come up with like a cool title.
Okay,
For Formula, for example, and it sounds so stupid, it come from watching Formula One.
Right.
It's so stupid.
Your music is just infectious, isn't it?
Thank you.
It's so catchy. The one thing with your music is, more than a lot of, again, with a lot of people who sort of play me their music, I find your music so uplifting. I don't think you could ever be down listening to your music. It's sort of it's got such a happy spirit to it.
Yeah.
That I think, to be honest with you, I've listened to your music a lot and sort of gone, yeah, maybe I need to make some happier tunes.
But Josh Hassel came on for episode 1 and he said that, similar to what you've just said there, and he was like, oh, people say I'm a bit too open with my lyrics and I'm a bit deep and blah, blah, blah. I just think that just makes who you are.
I like that, though. I think every song, like, I like to write songs as if they're kind of small little avant-garde film noir.
Mm.
Not to sound pretentious, but sort of, I like the idea of songs being little movies.
Yeah.
Like, you can almost imagine the characters in this sort of black and white New York.
That's exactly what I'm like.
World.
Yeah, because like with Formula, like I'll never get to that point, but I always thought if I did like a big arena show and I sung Formula, in the background, I'd have like...
Win.
Thanks. But I'd have like the chemistry, like Formula at the back. Map it out, I'd have like maps and like a car going around the map. 365, I'd have like dates and calendars and stuff. And like, I'd kind of like visualise like that. But I love writing. And then when you hear a song like yours... Did you write on your own?
I write everything on my own.
It's the thing is, when you turn around, you say like, you heard a football, I played at Bromley. I can hear that. It's a sort of song you would hear, that you wouldn't hear, map it out, hell yeah, down at Cray. But your song, it just kind of fits. It's just, it's proper, I love it. Generally, it's a great, have you got anything else like in the works?
Yeah, new single's coming out 14th of June. It's called Red.
So that'll probably be out by the time this is aired.
Oh, okay.
But great. You need to say is, my single's out, it's done amazing, it's gone number one.
Exactly, and... don't buy it.
What's it called? It's called Red.
Don't buy it, you'll only be disappointed. it's called Red.
Red.
Yeah, 14th of June it comes out. It's a lot more of a kind of upbeat country sort of blues song.
That's awesome.
It's different to Evil. It's got a bit more of a band behind it. And Pete and my friend Aram Armet, who I work with a lot, he's over in Bexley Heath. Just they've played some amazing, amazing stuff on it. And again, just so I'm not just saying it. I every part of this just blows my mind that people actually want to make music with me. At some point, I feel like they're going to turn around and go, "Yeah, I'm not. This is rubbish." I'll go, "Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I've just been stringing you along, to be honest." But no, I'm really, really pleased with it. I think it's going to be good. I hope people like it.
Is Evil like the first proper song you've done? Because you've got a couple, you've got two on Spotify, you've got two live tracks.
That was a couple of live songs that
yeah,
I did.
But is Evil like the first like proper?
Yeah, that's the first sort of single. I've got a lot of songs, and to be honest with you, I had already made an album that might become a bit more of a second album.
Mm.
Because the first album, I just started, when I opened that sort of Jumanji box, all of these songs started coming out. Don't know how, don't know where yep. they come from. And they started feeling really good. And the first album, I've kind of got it all down now. I need to record it, which I'm going to do over the next few months. And it's shaping up nicely. I'm really proud of it. I think it's going to be good. I hope people like it. And play some shows, get out there and hopefully do a little bit of a tour or something. Would be
you
really
do like
nice.
An album launch show? Is that something you
that would
like
be good?
Yeah,
yeah, that'd be really, really cool. Yeah. Hopefully the album's going to be out towards the end of the year.
That's cool.
Because when I was in a band, we played to every man and his dog all the time.
Yeah.
So again, it's another thing of kind of, I've done a few sort of like open mic-y things and people's parties and weddings or whatever. But in terms of kind of singing and doing my own stuff, it's going to be starting again, really. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited about doing
think,
it.
I generally think you've got such a strong vocal. What would you say is your strongest point? Vocals or writing?
I always didn't really like my voice, and I was always really self-conscious about it. But what I have come to terms with is the fact that what I can sing is I think we grew up in a period of time where there was a lot of Arctic Monkeys type vocal of, I went down to the shops and I bought some sweets. And I think for you and me, I sing in a bit more of a kind of maybe bluesy. I can make my voice kind of, without putting tickets on myself, I can definitely go more into that kind of R&B, Otis Redding, old school soul. When I've had a lot of people say to me that I don't look like how I sound. And I've come to terms with that.
Yeah.
So what I have managed to do is, like a lot of people have made the comparison to me of sort of like Ray LaMontagne and Paolo Nutini, which is amazing, amazing, amazing people. And I've just come to terms with that's what I can do with my voice, and I'm quite proud of it.
So you're in a good place, everything now.
A lot of things in my personal life have gone really, really well, and there's been stuff in the past that has been really tough, and I think we've all lost a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite a few kind of health things that were going wrong with me. Turns out I'm allergic to wheat. Who knew?
Wheat.
Yeah, so I eat gluten free as much as I can.
Oh.
And I was getting a lot of issues with that. So
well,
now,
how do you know you're allergic to wheat?
You can do some tests.
Yeah.
I'm not celiac. That's a different thing. But
did you come up with like red blotches and stuff? Because I'm allergic to almonds, and I found that when I was younger, I just come up with like red blot, and I was sneezing.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting a lot of swelling, a lot of problems in my stomach, a lot of rashes on my back. I was getting a lot of spots.
Was this a new allergy then?
It's kind of almost been going on my whole life to various different degrees.
But you've only just clocked on what it was.
But I've only really, and it was a conversation actually with my friend Aram's girlfriend, who sort of said to me about celiac and wheat and gluten free, and I thought, okay, let's give this a bit of a go. Did like a few tests, and I feel better than I've ever felt in my life.
That's great.
Mentally, physically. I think we all can go to sort of, you know, dark places at times and feel really down and really low and lose people who we didn't really want to lose. And that's the thing, though. That's the thing with sort of music and football. They're sort of those universal languages that just make you... They sort of mean... It's that thing of football and music sort of mean everything and nothing all at the same time. It's not... You know, you could say it's not important, it's just entertainment, it's just... But how it makes you feel and that community is the most important thing in your life. Mm. The things that you enjoy doing, no matter how stupid they are the most important things in your life.
Mm.
So if you absolutely love standing in the rain on a Tuesday night watching non-league football, drinking cups of tea and eating a Snickers, other chocolate bars are available, then you just got to do it. And I think I gave up music for a long time to maybe focus on other things and other people that ultimately I shouldn't have done. And I think now I've just fallen in love with it all over again and feel really relaxed about it. And just, I enjoy it so much that it almost makes you sort of have that kind of bulletproof feeling of just sort of, I just love doing it.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And doing things like this are the best. It's sort of, there's nothing to sort of be worried about.
It's so funny because like when, I mean, this is continue thing, this podcast version is just so we can like carry on. Like I told you, the continue music thing, because ultimately continue music was made by Arthur and I to showcase local talent.
Yeah.
Because there's so much local talent here. And then when I see someone like you and hear someone, I'm like, I like that, what he's doing. I love that song. I love what I want. And but when you ask someone, it's like, you're obviously going to get a yes or no. When you said yes, it's like, oh, awesome. Awesome. Because I generally think people are going to like your stuff. And it's quite exciting on this hearing that you're in a good place of it. You've got an album coming out. You've got a new song coming out, which will be already out by the time this is released. But it's really cool to see local talent, good local talent, enjoying what they're doing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to do, because I'm planning like a charity gig next year, and I'd love for you to play on it.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Because like I'm just fascinated to hear what you've got coming up.
Yeah, there's this part of it where I've got enough material now. I've just got to kind of record it and learn it.
Yes.
I've sort of got to that point where it's like, no, I'm really, really excited about it. Really, really up for it. Really want to go and play a few places, because I there's a place up in Liverpool. I go to Liverpool quite a bit. I've got some friends up there, and there's a place called Shenanigans. It's like a pub in Liverpool, and it has some great music on and stuff in there. And that was it, really. A couple of years ago, I hadn't seen a friend of mine for a long time.
Yeah,
I went up there to see her and her wife, and I sort of went into that pub, saw all this live music, saw all this like trad Irish music stuff going on as well, and I just sort of thought, I need to do this again. I know it's 2021, 2022. What's gone has gone. There's no point sort of dwelling on it, although there's a huge bit of irony because all of the songs dwell on it. But in a sort of release sort of way. But to me, it was like, I've just got to do this. I've got to do this again, because, and I don't care what anybody says or thinks or whatever else, I'm just doing it for me.
That's a great place to be at. It's a great place to be at.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's like, you must love what you do as well. It always seems like your music has just got that feeling of kind of, this guy loves what he does.
Yeah, I'm in your place now, because I used to be in such a place of like being stressed, because when I originally put my, like the stuff you listen to out, I was like, I want to be successful. I want to be playing arenas. I want to be famous. I want to do this. I want to do this. But now I've got to the point where I'm just like, you know, sod that. If that does happen, amazing. But I'm at the point now where I write songs a lot. I've got a lot of songs that I've recorded I haven't released yet.
Yeah.
But like,
what's the one that came out in April that you said you weren't going to release it?
Yeah, it was a song I released in 2011. No. I wrote it in like 2011, 2012, and then I released it in about 2019, 18, 19.
Yeah.
But I never knew how to put it on any streaming service. So I put it on YouTube.
Okay.
And I literally put it up there and it got 16,000 views.
Wow.
Which I, at the time I didn't know was good. Because it was the first time I dropped. I was like, is that good?
Yeah.
And I deleted it. Because I hated the sound of my voice. Kind of the struggles you had and the insecurities you had with your vocal. Because you and I, though, are different sounding, distinctive voices.
Right.
We have, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
And I deleted it. And I just thought, I sound awful. Like, what the... And I deleted it. But, like, it was only, like, a few months ago. I was like, in the vault of, like, my memories at the studio I go to. And I listened to a very old mix of that song. I listened to it, and I was like, it's got fiddle on it. I've done it properly.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is...
good.
This is good. What? This is good.
Yeah, really.
Why did I delete this?
Yeah.
And okay, it's not the strongest song I've ever written. It's one of the first songs I ever wrote that I actually liked. And then compared to that one and to like the map it outs and the formula stuff, like I feel like my songwriting has gone on a journey and it was nice to hear that kind of evolution of my songs. But the fact that I was like, I need to release this properly. I need to give it the proper release that I should have. And like, it was just hard. I don't do many shows because like I feel like deep within me, like I suck, but I'm still fighting that kind of thing.
I think it's important to find. I think the one thing that is important about playing live, and definitely a mistake I've made in the past, is kind of finding the right places and the right people to play in front of, but also what sort of stage show you want to put on.
Mm.
That sort of just turning up to a pub and playing is pretty demoralising. Mm. It's sort of you almost want to put on your own show.
It's weird. It's so weird you say that. You don't know this, but in 2021, I put on a charity gig at the Avenue Theatre in Sittingbourne.
Okay.
I hosted the event, and I want to do another one, which is what I spoke to you about, a charity gig.
Yeah, lovely.
And, we 88 seats, sold it out, ran a bunch of money for charity, and I got well up for that, and I loved that. And I was
brilliant.
Like, I'm in. But what you just said there, doing like the local pubs and it sounds so snobbish.
Yeah.
But I can't get up for that.
No.
It's kind of like Fury going back to the boss and going full circle, like Fury and Ngannou. It's quite obvious. It's quite obvious he didn't get up for that fight.
Yeah.
He was like kind of. And I'm not comparing myself to Tyson Fury, but I just when it comes to these pubs and clubs things, I can't get up for it. I don't enjoy it. I don't want to come across snob. People are like you should do that because to get. But I don't enjoy it.
It's better off putting on your own thing with your own people.
Yeah.
I think. Like, that's why I think me and you should probably play some gigs together.
Yeah,
and stuff
I think you're right.
Because I think we could sort of, you know, I think it's that thing of knowing who you're playing with is going to support you and be there for you and you can sort of work on it together.
Mm.
Those days of just sort of turning up to random places in the middle of nowhere, I don't know. I think it's
a fair play to the people that do it.
Yeah.
There's people on socials that they do these gigs all the time. I've got a gig here.
Yeah. Which is fine, I think, if you do a lot of covers.
Yeah.
But it's a real slog if you're going to be doing your own stuff.
I don't enjoy playing covers.
No.
It's bad. I should do. I should play covers when I do these gigs, but I don't enjoy playing covers.
No, why should you?
Yeah.
Why should
you? So I like going to these songwriter nights and these things like that so I can like showcase those.
Yeah, exactly. Van Gogh didn't do Colour by Numbers, did he?
Exactly.
It's like you are your own artist.
Yeah.
If people want to come and see that. I've got a friend actually who's just opened a venue called the Big Theatre in Biggleswade.
Oh.
My friend Tim. And he said to me about, you know, they're trying to put people on and put gigs on there where they are people who turn up and play their thing and do their own stuff.
Hmm.
It's not like a kind of Mr. Brightside Sex on Fire evening.
Hmm.
It's, you know, people who are real artists.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, yeah, that's where you want to be.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I would want to go and see people play original music.
Mm, me too.
You know, there's definitely a time and a place for Summer of 69. But it's, I think if you're putting on an evening or you're playing gigs, people should be there because they want to see it and enjoy. I've always thought that it would be great to put on gigs similar to the whole Jules Holland thing, where you have three or four artists.
Like a writer's round sort of thing.
Yeah, you have like three or four artists and
they go back and forth.
People play.
Yeah.
It's not just 45 minutes of you or whatever.
Yeah.
it's sort of bit of that, bit of that, and then maybe at the end we all play together and do like a big
sing along
at the end.
I thought about organising something like that because there's a nice little venue called Sun Pier House. In Chatham. There's a brand new venue. I was thinking about like trying to get in contact with them and doing a show like that, like a writer's round.
You should speak to my my friend, Mr. Flood. He does a lot of stuff for Medway Council and things like that. He's the guy who I said to you about who is he's done his own podcast, and him and his friend have been talking about a guy called Isaac Newell, the guy who was born in Strood.
That was
who went to Argentina, and they're called Newell's Old Boys because of a guy from Rochester.
Yes, crazy. Yeah, the football club.
And
in
they're trying to. They've got.
It's a Messi play for them.
Messi played for him. Pochettino, crazy. Bielsa.
It's a crazy story.
Maradona played for him, but sort of a bit later on.
Yeah, crazy story.
So yeah, so much, so much, so much around the local area that you can sort of see and do. To me, it's kind of the one thing that I would sell a gig for me is the fact of it's almost down to the poster, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If the poster is, this is the night, these are the acts that are playing, if you want to come and see these, this is the night. And to be fair to like people who DJ and stuff, that's what they do.
Yeah.
If it's just, we have live music on, I don't see the promotion in, I don't, that's not really,
I'm not
about that. That's fine, but it's, to me, I would rather put on the Alex Lane Experience starring this person, this person, this one, James O'Hurley, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And then it's sort of like you buy into that night is what that night is. To me, that's the that's what I'd
No, I'd agree. I'd that, that's play. The place I'd love to do.
Because it's more of a night.
Yeah, when you get live music here, it's normally like the bars that just have the decks in the middle. And like, play Wonderwall! It's like, that sort of place.
Yeah.
But honestly, though, thank you so much for coming on. We've done hour and eight on here.
Great.
But like, it's great having you on.
Absolute pleasure.
Because like, every time we speak, we talk, we dive into so many like different subjects.
Part two.
It's so cool. Yeah, it's so cool. But it's honestly,
this is part one of eight. So
part one of eight.
Tune
in. By the time this comes out, your song will be out. And when do you reckon your album will come out?
I'm hoping it's going to come out in December. I'm going to be recording it over sort of June, July, August is my plan.
That's cool.
To record it all, get it all together, and make it the best it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an image in my head of what I want it to be and what I want it to sound like and who I want to be involved. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. If you want to be involved, that'd be great.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Great.
Well, honestly, it's amazing to have you on. And yeah,
thank you.
James O'Hurley. What's your Instagram or like your socials and stuff so people can check you?
I'm James O'Hurley on most things, definitely Instagram.
Yeah.
And Top Floor Records is the guys who sort of manage me and stuff, and they're the best. So
But when this comes out, I'm gonna link all that anyway and stuff. But awesome.
Thanks, mate. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming
Pleasure.
On.
Pleasure, thank you so much.
James O'Hurley, episode 4 of the Continue Cast.
Thank you.
Thank you so
Pleasure.
Much.
Come on, you ones.